It's Abu here. You're probably wondering, what's different around here? And the answer is everything. I took the last year off, not just from podcasting, but from everything. I needed a reset. Last year was one of the hardest years of my life. And as you know, life doesn't just throw one thing at a time at you. It hits you with everything all at once. I hit a mental roadblock, my business hit a wall, and then I faced an unimaginable loss of someone I deeply loved. I had a reset. I went deep, asking myself, what's wrong with me? What did I do to deserve this? I struggled with grief, with loss, with relationships, with business, and family. I was operating from a place of seeking permission. Permission to let go, permission to step back, permission to prioritize myself. And then it hit me. You don't need anyone's approval to take the next step. You don't need permission to be a CEO. But you do need the tools, the mindset, and the support to lead in a way that doesn't cost you your peace. It took me over a decade to truly figure this out. And now, I'm ready to keep going, sharing what's worked, what hasn't, and everything I'm still learning along the way. So if you're ready, and I know I am, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with someone who needs to hear it. Because this isn't just my journey, it's ours. Lastly, I just want to thank everyone that reached out to me over the last year just to check on me, make sure I was doing good. I truly appreciate the support, and I look forward to continue building more deep connections with you all. This is the Powered AF Podcast, a show about visionaries, high performers, and entrepreneurs, and their stories on how they push past fear, overcome imposter syndrome, and navigate through the mental roadblocks in order to achieve the highest level of success. And I'm your host, Abu Fofana. First, glad to finally have you on here, and have her introduce herself in a second. But, you know, we try to talk about the conversations that, you know, aren't being shared on Instagram. You know, these are the truths, right? And they're unfiltered. And they're about, you know, what's actually happening and how it's actually happening. And so these conversations are really to give the people that are listening in, the dreamer, the person that's wondering if all their efforts are worth it, they're staying up late at night, and they're asking themselves, you know, should I keep doing this? Should I keep going? You know, these are for those doers and dreamers as well, trying to figure it out. And they don't have any community or anyone to talk about this with. So they go on Instagram, but all they see is the highlight reels, right? So what I try to do is have these unfiltered conversation. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about retail. We're going to talk about selling. We're going to talk about, you know, being successful online. But we're also just going to talk about, you know, the toll it takes and the sacrifice. And so I have Jasmine on the podcast this episode, this week. So introduce yourself. Let people know who you are.
All right. Well, thank you, first of all, for having me, my good friend. Hello, everyone. My name is Jasmine Bowdry. I am the founder of Shift Style House, a online women's clothing brand that really aims to keep the modern day woman stylishly at the top of her game. I also have a retail consulting business and courses, Breakout Fashionista. So happy to be here.
Yes, yes. And the reason why I wanted to bring you on, first of all, you are doing an amazing job. You know, I know a lot of times we're our worst critic on ourselves, but what made you get into retail? Like, why did you decide retail was going to be your thing?
Yeah, so it really goes back. My first job was in retail when I was 14 at a department store. I'm aging myself, but at a department store called Winkleman's. And when I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to study. I was looking into business because I had a lot of family members that had been successful in business, getting their MBA, and was going to take that route. And so when I was kind of taking just my general courses, that's what I was focusing on. And then it was actually my mom who told me about, you know, have you ever thought about retail buying and merchandising. I had been really active with like fashion shows and clothing, you know, styling, dressing up my little paper dolls back in the day. And so she was actually the one who introduced me to it. And I was like, well, what is retail buying? So I really didn't understand what it was, but she was like, you know, you like the front side of retail, but it would be, you know, nice if you understood like how the business of retail works, because it's business as well.
And how different was it from what you thought? Because I think a lot of people look at retail and they look at the glamorous side of wearing clothes and, you know, going down a runway. But what what was the difference when you actually were thrown into that?
Yeah. So like retail buying, the cool thing I'll say about it for me as someone who is right and left brained is, you know, you get to tap into that creative, but it's really analytical, like, you know, knowing the data, understanding. That's why I'm always so big on understanding your numbers and knowing what that means, is because that's what drives the decisions in these Fortune 500 retail companies. You know, yes, it has to do with trend and color and, you know, things like that. But when we're forecasting numbers, when we're, you know, trying to look at our P&L, when we are trying to, you know, explain to the higher ups what an assortment should look like, what products we should bring into the market, it's all data and numbers that back that. So that was like the, you know, the shocking part. Like, I didn't realize how analytical it was until I actually probably, even when I was taking those courses, it wasn't until I actually got into the job that you are just looking at thousands of lines in Excel spreadsheets and formulas and all that stuff.
So when you start there, what's the progression? Do you go from retail buying to like, what's the progression in that industry?
Yeah. So the progression, you usually will either start in like maybe a merchandise buying internship or program. And then from there, you might become like a merchandise assistant. So I started as like a merchandise assistant. So, you know, you're just kind of doing like ad hoc tasks, going, getting coffee, you know, printer. From there, you go to assistant buyer, which you're usually responsible for one class or category. So if you think of a women's clothing department, the classes would be tops, dresses, bottoms, sweaters, things like that. And so one class of a category of bottoms might be women's junior denim. And so you're responsible for just that particular segment of the entire business. From there, either depending on the company, how big the retail company is, you can either go into an associate buyer role or like a senior assistant buyer. From associate buyer, then typically you go into the buyer role, which is when you are actually responsible for the entire P&L of the category. And then you're managing assistant buyers and merchandise assistants. So,
wow.
How
long were you?
It took a while. It took some time. Yeah. I mean, it took a good, I wanted at least 10
years. Wow.
Like so, 7 to 10, maybe.
Wow. So when was it that you then decided, okay, I learned everything that I can in this space, let me transition to the next thing? Like, when was that period, and why did you transition and then still stayed in retail?
So I started getting like the entrepreneurship itch while I was still in corporate in about 2015. And, you know, e-commerce wasn't as big as it was now. Actually, a lot of like e-commerce companies still probably didn't even, you know, operate. They might have had a website, but they weren't operating, you know, as they do now. And I had moved. So in retail, again, kind of depending on the company, things are broken off into soft lines, which is typically like clothes, and then hard lines, which might be electronics, appliances, furniture. So I started off in soft lines, and then I moved to hard lines as I grew up, because I started to go into what's called big box retail brands. So I started at Saks, which is a specialty retail company, and then I moved to Sears, Office Depot, which are more of the big box companies. And so when I started to move into the hard lines, the creative part of me started to dwindle. Like, one of my categories was batteries. Like, there is nothing sexy about a battery. You know, you put it on promotion, you look at the numbers, like, it, you know, the business kind of ran itself. security and home, like things that go behind the wall in the house. So it started just not being like, you know, like, you know, I know the business, I know how to run the business, but there was no like excitement in it. So in 2015, I started to just kind of dabble around and looking into like online businesses, and just really what I had a good time doing, which has always been fashion, it's always been styling. So once I just did some research and realized, oh, okay, I don't think it's like that hard to, you know, actually get it started, then that's when I, you know, got my LLC and, you know, made a whole flow chart of, you know, when I was going to launch and all of that. And I decided to stay within retail because it's what I knew.
Your
it's
expertise.
What I already knew.
Right,
you know,
right.
So.
And it, I think it's, you know, when you're transitioning, like it's how do I look for, you know, that next thing? If you already have a lot of skills that you have built up. So you say, you know what, let me use my expertise, what people know me as, know me for, and where I get, you know, where I also had a lot of enjoyment. Now, for that person that is currently, let's say they're in the industry, whether it's retail or they're in an industry they've been in for 10 years or so, and they're feeling like, you know, can I do something new? You know, what would you tell them? Like, what was that thought process that, because you were in this space for a while, that you decided to just shake everything up. Like, what would you say was going through your mind and that advice that you could give somebody?
What was going through my mind was, I know that this can't be, like, this can't be life. Like, on some, gotta be more, Jay-Z. Like, this can't be, you know, all there is me just coming to work, going home, and like not doing anything for myself. So for me, it just started to be thinking about, what do you really want like for your life? What do you really want, you know, for your life? What do you really want your life to look like? Do you, you know, want to work for somebody else for the duration until you, you know, retire? Which for some, that's cool. Like, that's, you know, what you choose. That's their path. But for me, it just started to be where I had noticed a pattern like throughout my trajectory of my career, like the increased salaries wasn't, you know, it was that wasn't bringing happiness. You know, having certain lifestyle, like that wasn't bringing, I'm like, oh, something is like missing from this puzzle. So I just started to explore what that is. But for the person that, you know, is maybe a bit hesitant to start something new or try something new, like, you're never going to know until you actually do it. And I know that's a bit cliche, but it's really just what the facts are.
Experience is
that you just
teacher.
Aren't going to know until you actually do it. But while you're still at a corporate job, like, all of those things that are, you know, corporate structure are things that you can be learning to carry over into entrepreneurship, no matter what industry you decide to be an entrepreneur in. So sitting in, you know, a marketing meeting, shadowing some, you know, people in marketing, shadowing HR, shadowing leadership, are all skills that, you know, can be utilized while you're still trying to understand, you know, if this is the path that you want to take.
And I think it's like a really strong and disciplined mindset to, you no longer want to be in a place, but you're utilizing the resources, right, in order to prepare you for the next thing. But I think what most people do when they no longer want to be there, they shut down.
They just shut down.
And they just go to collect the check. And then they don't utilize anything to help set them up for the next gig or the next job or the next leap that they take in their journey. And so it really does take a lot of, you know, discipline and selflessness to not center it around, like, the negatives that you're experiencing at that job. So you decided to take this leap of faith. You started, you know, when did you have this validation that, okay, I, you know, am going down a path that I have an alignment with, right? Where you're like, okay, leaving my comfortable space was worth it, because, like, what happened when you felt that and saying, oh, this is, you know, it's different, it's new, but like, I'm kind of enjoying doing this and betting on myself.
Yeah, I think probably when I got my first order, like when I got my first sale, because I look at it as, if I can get one, then I can get 10. If I can get 10, then I can get 100. If I can get 100, I can get 1,000. And so having just that first customer, you know, being able to purchase from me, I think that's what really just, you know, kind of lit a fire. Like, wow, somebody actually, you know, bought from my business. Now, if I can just get, you know, more people to buy from my business. But I think that's what really just helped ignite, you know, the flame. To me, that's like, that's proof of concept, right? Like, right. You know, having that first person that believes in you enough to spend their dollar with you, yeah. I think says a lot.
And what was it like when you were trying to figure it out, right? Like, maybe what are some of the things that you had struggled with that you also see a lot of boutique owners, when you go on social media, et cetera, that are trying to start their yeah. business or trying to start a retail business? Like, what were similarities and like what you had struggled with that you see people struggling with right now?
So it's two things. So I will say, especially like with boutiques, because it's clothing. So initially your mind is always, well, it's clothes, so I can sell clothes to anybody. Like everybody needs clothes. And so when I first started, like, that's what I thought. Like, I didn't have, although I had this knowledge of product assortment and breadth versus depth and how to build a product assortment, it hadn't clicked for me, for my business yet. So my first collection was a whole hot mess. Like, I'm actually surprised anybody bought it, because I'm like, girl, what was that? Like, what were you doing? But I was trying to sell to everyone. And that's what I see a lot of boutique owners doing, is thinking that, okay, well, if I niche down, then I'm not going to make as much because I'm not honing in on a specific person and being able to serve that specific person well. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the product assortment. So just kind of having this hodgepodge of just random, you know, products, because you're trying to just make as much as you can, or you think you're trying to make as much as you can. So you have clothes, shoes, accessories, lashes, hair, like all of this is on, you know, one website, and it's overwhelming to a customer. So that's usually what the two things that I see, is really not wanting to hone in on who their customer actually is, because they think that, well, she buys all of this stuff. And then not having an actual product assortment, just kind of what we call in the industry is spot buying.
Yeah. And it's like, you're looking back now, you're looking at, okay, here are all the things, because you have a lot of experience. And so when you see these things, when you go on social media and, like, you know, it's people are starting boutiques left and right every day. In their minds, when they go on and they see like these celebrities that have boutiques, in their mind, they're like, oh, I could do that, right? I could do that. Or they're taking advice from people that are saying it's very easy to start a boutique. Like, why do you feel like it's so important, if you are getting into this space, to learn from someone who has actual experience in not only working in retail, not only being a buyer, right? Like, it seems like you have all these different experiences. Why do you feel like maybe they're not thinking, people that are starting boutiques, okay, I need to go learn from someone who's been in the industry?
So I think it's a couple of things. One, it's the highlight reel of, you know, seeing popular people or celebrity people who already had a large audience start something. And while it's cool to be able to see yourself in someone else's success, everybody's going to have a different story. And so how I look at it is, you have someone like, I started my boutique, but I already knew the business. So, and it was still hard for me. And I look at it as I look at it from an entire holistic perspective of like the overall retail industry and what the big box brands are doing. And many people who are starting these businesses, they don't have that expertise. And so they don't understand when they, you know, launch and they don't get that sale, or when they don't get a sale for, you know, 6 months, and they're like, but such and such, you know, just did so good, you know, with her sale, and, and she just launched, and, you know, why is my business not like hers? it's different factors, right? Like, you know, you have a lot of people starting boutiques that already have had a following. Like, that's a factor. Yeah. You know, they already had a community, they already had an audience, and it's easier when you're just starting from ground zero. And so when clients come to me, it's with that ground zero mindset. That's why we, even if you, I've had clients that have been in business 7+ years, we're going back to who your customer is, because you never really thoroughly fleshed out who it was. You've never thoroughly fleshed out how to build a product assortment. You never thoroughly fleshed out how to understand your margins and profit. You just start pricing your products because you saw how other people price their products. And so when you work with an expert, they don't come, I don't come with a one track mind, right? I don't come from, hey, this is how I did it, so this is how I'm showing you how to did it, no, how to do it. No, this is how this company did it. This is how this company did it. This is how this company did it. This is how they're still doing it. And here is the data, because I still stay up to date on, you know, all research trends and insights. This is what they're doing overall in the space.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, important to understand, is that you're speaking from experience. Hey, here's, you know, here's my experience. Like, I've seen so many different things, working in different departments, being around so many different brands. This is what you need to do. And I think for some people that are on social media starting these boutiques, they're only seeing one thing, and that's like the highlight reel, which you mentioned. And I think that's like even an entrepreneur conversation. We go on social media and then we're like, okay, I need to be like Nike, so let me do all the product assortments. Or someone just asked me, why am I not selling this? Now let me go order all that inventory. Right. And retail is a very hard business because so hard. Inventory. <So hard. laughs> Inventory, people. And I think most people don't realize that aspect of it. So why do you feel like, because I know you have a boutique, but you've also trained a lot of different business owners on starting boutiques. Why do you feel like they have a level of success learning from you than maybe someone else?
I think for two reasons, kind of what I mentioned before, because I don't teach from a one-sided perspective. And I think that, you know, that's what a lot of people do. They can only give, hey, I started this business, it's successful, this is the blueprint of how I did it. With me, it's, these are proven strategies that the retail industry uses. This is how you calculate. This is how you do these formulas. And then the second part of that is I'm still in it. Like, I'm still a boutique owner. I didn't start my coaching and consulting business and then quit my boutique to, you know, help people. I'm still in it. So I'm constantly testing and tweaking and being able to share that information with my clients as well. I'm the guinea pig. So, you know, I'll test anything before I pass it on to them. Like, hey, okay, this is what, you know, I just did, and this is what's working.
So let's talk about, you know, you've been in business, you've been in that space, you developed a level of expertise. Recently, I know this because I was just talking to you, you were vending, right? You decided, you know, there's really popularity in like drop shipping and selling online and like e-commerce, but you recently vended at, I think, the Essence Festival, and you had a lot of success vending there. Why do you think it's a big missed opportunity for people that are selling online? Like, why do they not look for opportunities to vend in person?
To be honest, they don't want to put the money up.
Right.
You know, it takes money to make money. And a lot of entrepreneurs, especially new entrepreneurs, they're afraid to invest. Like, they're afraid, they're scared to take the risk, but without the risk, there is no reward. And so a lot of new business owners miss out because they don't want to part with the bread. And, you know, Essence wasn't cheap. Essence was a few racks. Essence was a few racks. But I at least tripled my investment being there. And
but why? Because I know there were people there that vended that did not. Yeah. So what do you feel like you did well that made you stand out, and you tripled your sales when you vended? Like, what do you think made you stand out?
So the key things were understanding that the customers are at Essence may not be who normally shops with Shift. These are people that have never heard of the brand, likely, right? So understanding that means, where do I need to put some differentiation in my product assortment? So I had things, you know, that maybe had like bling and sparkles. Like, that's not my normal, that's not my normal girl. But, you know, you have to think of where they are. So with me, again, being a buyer and knowing how to put together a product assortment, I'm like, okay, they're at this festival. They're going to the concerts. Nicki Minaj is performing. Barbies or Barbs, whatever she calls her crew, but they wear pink, right? So we need to have some pink. There's going to be some all black events. There's going to be some all white events. So again, it goes back to understanding like who's going to be there. That's the first thing. So I understood who was going to be there. And then that allowed me to select a variety of different products to appeal to who this different customer, you know, might be. She wasn't the one that was coming to the booth trying to haggle prices. I'm going to events and I need to look cute. What I packed is not what I want to wear. So what do you have for me? And so having a different product assortment. Third is having the booth stand out. So I'm all for aesthetic, visually appealing booths and concepts. Like, I didn't want my booth to feel like a flea market, because that's not the aesthetic or the person that I was trying to attract, right? So my booth flowed, it was open, things were merchandised well, because again, I'm a buyer, so I put things together. You put your styling looks throughout the floor so that she can visualize it. And so for me, it's what's the easiest way for her to buy. If she sees this is a whole look already done, like, she's gonna just buy that because she sees it. She doesn't have to think too much. Also, I have a fitting room. So a lot of people that were there don't think about that, or a lot of business owners just don't think about that at all. But one of the biggest ways for a customer to say no is, I don't know how this is gonna fit me. Mm-hmm. So having a fitting room, you know, having mirrors to be able to see and try on. I am a stylist, so, you know, I was there styling people up, like, okay, add this with this. Nope, that doesn't look right, you know, and not being afraid to tell them, okay, no, I don't like how that looks. But then they, you know, go buy something else. And so, and then the last thing was the numbers. So I literally, the goal I hit was the goal that I set. And so I always work off a good, better, best strategy. Like, okay, you know, what will I be okay with if I walk away? What's going to be better? And then, like, what's the best out of this scenario? And having different pricing scenarios that would lead me to that goal from a profit perspective, not just from a gross sales perspective. So, like, what profit do I want to walk away with after having spent, you know, money on the inventory and the booth and all that? So literally the numbers, the pricing was down to a T. I knew how much I needed to sell, how much inventory I needed to have on hand in order to actually reach that.
And first of all, congrats, because that was the first thing I said when you told me that you had, you know, you hit your goal. And I wonder, you know, like, do you think it was your experience that, like, because you're explaining strategy right now, right? Like, do you think that's from your, like, your experience?
Absolutely.
Like, okay.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Because as a buyer, we would have trade shows. And you know, it might be on the other side of it, but you know, we would have trade shows and we would have to attend trade shows. So it definitely comes from my experience. Like, you know, I use what's called open to buy. So open to buy is where you don't overbuy. It's literally where you have a budget to operate out of in order to reach the sales number that you're trying to reach. And so you buy that amount of inventory based on your open to buy budget to be able to hit whatever that goal is. So it definitely was strategy from my experience, pulling from past vendor events, what's gone right, what's gone wrong.
Right. No, and that's important to differentiate, because you're getting to the nuances. Like, this is how you do it, right? And I think as you're speaking, people are probably like, oh, I never thought about that before, right? But that's the difference, right? Like, I think when we get on social media, we don't really hear when people talk.
Yeah, right? True.
Like, we see them post something and we're like, oh my God, I want to do that. Like, right. How do I make that number?
But there was a whole strategy behind hitting that number.
Correct. But like you said, some of those people already have big followings. So it's like, you know, for them, it may be a lot easier than someone that's just starting out and trying to figure that out, or someone that's thinking about vending but doesn't know where to start. So for you, as you look ahead, you know, the other day they say, you know, we're in a recession officially, et cetera. So how do you see retail now? Like, would you say, okay, it's smart to start a retail business right now? You know, how do you see, even during the pandemic, how do people react during, you know, these drastic events? Like, what have you seen in the past?
So I think that a few things are going to happen. Yes, you can still start a business because people are still going to need clothes, right? People are still going to need clothes, but it might take one being able to pivot what they may be used to selling in order to survive through recession. My brand survived during the pandemic because I shifted most of my assortment to like loungewear and like work from home attire, because that's where are we going? She's not going to brunch, you know, she's not going to date night. She's going to her laptop onto a Zoom meeting. So it's being able to understand that one, it's okay to pivot. Like, you need to pivot to sustain. And so being okay with pivoting, one. Secondly, I think that there are going to be two kind of ends of the spectrum with the recession. It's going to be kind of the low cost brands. So the cheaper brands, because people are going to be looking for savings. They're not going to be looking to spend a lot. And then there's going to be the high end, the higher price point, because the ones that already spend it probably aren't necessarily going to stop their lifestyle based on this, because they're probably not going to be affected. Typically in the recession, it's the middle class that's affected. And so understanding that, I think for anybody that's in this space or thinking about getting in this space, where do you want to fit? Do you want your brand to be more on the lower price side, or do you want to be on the higher price side? Because either of those sides, I don't think you'll lose during a recession.
No, and that's you know, because I think that people, like you said, right, you have to be able to pivot, you have to be able to adapt, and sometimes people are just so set in their ways that they don't want to change, you know their business model or business structure or how they're approaching selling. Maybe it's not working for them right now. So thank you for that. I do have a question for you about like these fast fashion brands like the Shein and H&M and Forever 21. And I know I'm missing. What's the one I'm missing?
Fashion Nova.
Like, what do you think about the fast fashion brands? Like, I know you've seen them popping up left and right. Like, what's your perception of them? And you know, what do you think about them per se?
I think for me, understanding the entire retail industry as a whole, like, fast fashion isn't anything new. It's always been a part of the retail ecosystem. And so when you see what I see is more so from the customer side complaining, like, I can get this for, you know, X price off Fashion Nova, or I can get that, you know, your price is this, but I can get this from Shein for this price. And so from that perspective, what people need to understand is that these fast fashion companies buy in bulk. So they're buying a lot. And anytime you buy a lot of quantity, it should, if you're a good negotiator, drive your costs down. And so they're able to price products at these lower price points because they buy and produce so much. And so, you know, from a perspective of the boutique owner who feels like she has to compete with these types of companies, you don't. You don't have to compete. They're in their own, you know, they're in their own space. Your cost is not the same as Fashion Nova. And so that's when I see brands pricing their products so low because they're trying to compete. It's like, boo, stop. You are not them. Your cost is nowhere near what they cost, what their cost is. Like, price what it should really be. And I see them just so scared to actually price their products properly because they're afraid of feeling like they're competing with these fast fashion brands. But take yourself, they're in a whole different whole different arena.
Yeah, I think you'll always lose if you're competing with someone on their terms. Like, you have to focus on like what you do well, you know, what your brand stands for and the community that you've built around your brand as well. I know I said this is going to be a, you know, 30 minute interview. So I'm going to stop it here because I know you gotta go. You got to run to the airport. But I appreciate you stopping through for the podcast for this episode. Let people know where they can find you, learn more about you, learn from you, or purchase from you as well.
Definitely. You can follow me on all social platforms at Jasmine Bowdry. That's JASMENEBOWDRY. And you can check out my website, jasminebowdry.com, for all of my services and offerings.
Yes. So thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast episode. Make sure you go follow Jasmine and let us know if you have any additional questions. I'll post everything in the show notes below and I'll see you during next week's episode. All right. Thank you for joining us at the Powered AF podcast. Make sure to visit our website and make sure to follow our podcast anywhere you listen to the podcast to make sure you never miss a show. And please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode and this show, please make sure to leave us a review. It really, really does help. And last thing, if you're interested in this freebie that I just released, I want you to check this out. Recently, I put together a free online training on how to 10x your sales online. This is for business owners who are struggling with making consistent sales online. Whether you run a product or service-based business, this is the perfect training for you. The free training is still up and you can access it by going to poweryourlaunch.com/pod. Again, poweryourlaunch.com/pod. That's P-O-D. All right. Thanks again for listening in. I'll see you during our next show.